This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
I wanted to start by introducing myself. I'm Brandy Hester. I'm the manager of application development at Andrews Kurth Kenyon. I'm also the Houston area member liaison for ILTA. And I have two other gentlemen joining me today. Do you all want to introduce yourselves?
My name is Broadus Pettiford. I'm the IT director for the Virginia Office of the Attorney General. And I also serve on the ILTA Planning Committee, as well as the member liaisons.
And my name is Luke Schneblin. I'm the manager of learning and development at Shook, Hardy & Bacon. And I am the member liaison for the Kansas City area.
All right. And we're joining together today to talk about the evolving role of IT staffing. So have you all seen a lot of change happening in your law firms? And if so, what type of change are you seeing?
I would say to start from a 10,000 foot view, I think there's change happening in law firms that's obvious and apparent to many. And I think to focus on the Kansas City market, I've seen a lot more firms create new roles or morph existing roles. Maybe they have an opening and they don't want to fill it, to create more of a jack of all trades type position where people are expected to do more with less. And I don't think that's necessarily new, but I think there are a lot of new changes and challenges that law firms are seeing specific to IT. And not to jump too far ahead in our conversation, but I think that with the advent of cloud everything, artificial intelligence, Internet of Things, I think there's a lot that law firms across America and internationally need to prepare for.
Yeah, this is Broadus. I would agree. Since I'm with the Attorney General's office, you know, a government agency, really operate on a small budget. So we've been as a need having to work with such a small staff. And as you mentioned, Luke, having to have people that are a jack of all trades. So that's something that, as you mentioned, isn't anything new. It's been a challenge that I've been personally having to deal with. And it becomes an even greater issue as we try to offer greater services to the attorneys that we support here, and becomes more evident as if when a person leaves. So, and I'm in a position now where my network engineer recently left. Now I'm going through saying, wow, what were all the things that he actually did? So I'm trying to fully staff him back in. Isn't just the network engineer I'm looking for. It's quite more involved with that. So that's when it, to me, really bubbles up and you really see what needs you actually have from a staffing standpoint.
And I think I'm seeing something similar in my own experience. I think there's a lot of employees that have a significant tenure in the firm that I'm in. And so they've adapted to a very unique role, not necessarily the role that they were hired for, but they've taken on a lot of additional responsibility over time. And whether that is a technology role or whether it's a practice support type of role, they wear a lot of hats. And I think the trend of going more lean, more and more and more lean in a law firm is something that makes it difficult to find a replacement staff member sometimes when you've got someone that leaves because the role is different than you would see anywhere else in a similar industry.
Yeah, I would just add too that I think there are a lot of, I think ILTA is an awesome network of people. And, you know, when someone leaves a firm or maybe their position gets cut, the ILTA family is there to help them out and help them get back in, on their feet. But I think that also, I think from a planning perspective, I think so many groups are reactively lean. So they're like, oh no, this person's leaving. What are we going to do? And I think the approach should be to be more proactively lean and efficient. Looking at, you know, how can you utilize your resources or maximize your existing resources? And then also ask yourself the what if, you know, my network engineer leaves, or what if someone with this great tenure, like you were saying, Brandy, leaves? You know, how do we fill in those gaps? Some of them are intangible, but I think a lot of it is information that you can house and kind of, you know, train a new person on. Not necessarily overnight, but if you have a plan in place, I think it sets you up for success in the future.
Right. I think I've seen a trend for a lot of silo in the different law firms that I've been connected with in one way or another. And I think that becomes problematic, especially when we're talking about this particular issue. So one of the things I do personally is I try to get my staff to cross-train on different responsibilities. And it could be a technology responsibility because I lead the technology team, but it also could be, like I said, a practice support or document preparation sort of technology that I try to make sure that they have the ability to fall back on someone else if they take ill or if they're to leave. We don't want to lose that knowledge. Mm-hmm. I ran into an issue a couple of years ago where I was new to the firm, and I had someone that had been at the firm for 30 plus years, and she unexpectedly took ill and took all of her knowledge with her. So mm-hmm. we spent over the last 2 years trying to recover from that, and that's just a situation that no manager and no law firm or any technology department or organization would want to be impacted by.
I'd agree. I know we might talk about this a little bit later on, but since you brought it up, I think the other piece of that is finding a group of people that are willing to adjust with that change, especially when you're mm-hmm. looking to hire someone else new. I think that whole silo mindset, people still hold on to that. And so if you've got a core group of people, like with me, my small team, the vast majority of them, they're willing to jump in and learn and cross-train and gather more opportunity for themselves personally and try to see how they can expand out on what they can do for my firm here. But you still have some folks, a pocket of folks that they enjoy those silos. You know, I'm strictly a network engineer, they might say, and I don't want to do any of the sysadmin. I'm not mm-hmm. interested in, you know, litigation support. So as the needs of the firm changes and we have to adjust, and again, people have to wear multiple hats, then that could also be a conflict if you've got the culture of individuals that they're not willing to adjust with that. And you need to find folks that you're bringing in that need to have that same mentality.
Another trend that I wanted to touch on before we get too much into talking about staff specifically is a move towards service-oriented architecture. Have either of you seen that trend picking up?
I'll jump in. I personally have not seen a whole lot. I did a little research in this as well before I got on for the podcast, and this is actually pretty new for me. I mean, the concept, from what I can see, is not a new concept, the service-oriented architecture. I like it. I think it's a good direction to go, and I see that it's starting to gain more traction in the industries, but it seems like a complex model that is preventing it from gaining traction very quickly across industries, not just for the legal industry in IT. I'm not sure if that's anything that you all have seen as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of like I hinted to when I first started talking about some of the things that we need to be aware of so our jobs aren't replaced, just like human intelligence rather than artificial intelligence. I like to call AI actual intelligence, but I think that some of the ways to keep yourself marketable and make sure that you're providing value to your firm is to be acutely aware of the technologies that are coming down the pipe. I think that usually legal, and I say usually from the staff side, legal is kind of the late adopters with a lot of the newer technology, service-oriented architecture, artificial intelligence, how we staff. Like I said, it tends to be reactive. But I found that, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, that if you're staying active in the ILTA E groups and keeping up with the new technologies that are coming in other industries, I think it sets you up for success in whatever role you're in. And I think too, and I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent, but to your point, Broadus, when you talked about, you know, maybe that person in that silo, they just want to be a network engineer. They only know, you know, how to do their job. So if you're privy to some of the information that you're receiving from whether it be ILTA or whatever, however you stay abreast of new technologies, I found that if you can create a culture of sharing some of these things that you're reading and making people aware of what's coming, not to necessarily scare them like, hey, machine learning is taking over your job in 3 years, But just letting them know that some of these technology implementations will have a dramatic, could have a dramatic effect on how your law firm is staffed. I mean, I've seen firsthand and know that some of the applications and software that we'll be implementing in the next 12 to 18 months will have a direct human impact. And I think kind of preparing for that and planning for that is very critical. So I can't speak too much to service-oriented architectures, but I know that, you know, technology is moving very, very, very quickly, and the legal IT staff needs to be prepared to know what those technologies do and how they can best suit their people to align with those technologies.
Right. I think one line of thought that I had, the way that your role must adapt to the change in technology. So if the trend is moving towards service-oriented architecture, then how do you, as a manager, adjust your method of managing staff when some of that staff isn't your own? It's staff from another organization or some sort of managed service provider. How do you adapt your role?
I would just say that I think all of our IT departments and any legal IT group needs to be a lot more fluid in how they work, and creating more autonomous teams to have a more business focus. Because I think that in IT, I'm kind of making a general statement, I think traditionally IT folks might have a specific technical, strategic, software related focus without realizing the business impact of some of the things that they're doing. And I think that any future IT group or individual will have to, you know, have a lot more business focus and really thrive on a constantly changing atmosphere. I was, in preparing for talking with you all, I was researching, like, what are the job titles of the future? And it was honestly kind of scary, because a lot of the job titles that I found, let's see here, machine learning engineer, Internet of Things architect, DevOps engineer, AI lawyer, chief data officer, data compliance officer. I mean, these are all words that we've been hearing, and you know, if you attend ILTACON, you see a lot of this. But with some of these technologies in place, I think the current day job description of most IT folk, none of this stuff is in there. So I think working towards the future, I think that both IT and whoever creates the job descriptions or creates new roles needs to be kind of apprised of some of the technologies that are being implemented at our firms.
Right. I think one of the things I always make sure to ask when I'm hiring someone new in their interview process is, how do you stay current with technology? And if they don't have a personal plan with as to how to accomplish that, or they sort of look at me dumbfounded, they usually get scratched from the list, because right. That means that they're not as adaptable as might be required, or they may not understand what's coming down the pipe. Now, of course, legal technology isn't always bleeding edge, so you don't necessarily need an employee that's bleeding edge or somebody that's super charismatic or anything like that, but they do have to be able to adapt with the change within your organization, the constant new adoption of new software products or changes in the way you structure data. You know, they have to be able to go with the flow and wear those additional hats and be willing to take on more. And self-study too. If someone's not willing to self-study, then they may not go beyond whatever their, I'll refer back to the word again, their silo is, and take on those additional responsibilities as staff needs to get more lean. Again, going back to the staffing question, have you found that when you are staffing for a position that you've maybe gone outside the bounds of the job description that was maybe set for a position, or do you find yourself rewriting job descriptions each time you hire in a role?
Yeah, me personally, I think it's something that I see that, yeah, that's what I have to do. But to me, that's also an underlying trend where as the needs of an organization grows, then that's, we have to think about those more frequently anyway, those job descriptions. As people grow, we kind of alluded to it earlier, that they take on things depending on what's needed at the time. And it only really bubbles up to us when we have to replace them. So to me, it seems like that's something that we should be doing on a regular basis, checking those periodically and keeping up with those types of things and not being as reactive, waiting until someone leaves, but proactively reviewing those things and making sure that how we have our resources aligned match up to the services that we are providing, whether they haven't changed at all or even if they've adjusted.
Yeah, I would just add as well, you know, I think that not, and I'm going to make a general statement, I think a lot of job descriptions in general are severely out of date. And a lot of it's just kind of CYA for HR. You know, you got to lift a 10-pound box, or you might be around a bunch of machinery, or, you know how to plug in a switch, might be electrocuted, that kind of stuff. But, and I say that kind of anecdotally, but I think that most of what you learn about what your job entails is once you get done with your new hire training and get actually assigned a project, or, you know, go out for beers or lunch with your team, and you really understand, you know, how resilient you'll need to be. And here's really what our team does, or your role on this team. And I think that some of the best dialogues I've had and with my team or with other peers at ILTA, you know, is, We're all, and I think I've said this before on another ILTA podcast or something, but most of the law firms and our IT groups, we're all doing the same types of projects. We're all upgraded to the newest DM. We're all moving to the next version of Windows and Office. And I think if you can utilize some of the knowledge of the people, or go and ask questions about, Hey, we know you X law firm have done this work with this vendor. We're looking at this vendor. I think you'll find that your ILTA peers and even your local firms, it's not really a competition for IT knowledge. I think there will always be someone to share. And I think that going back to kind of the job description, I think one of the things that should be in there is, you know, networking with peers. And getting some of that knowledge from the crowd, not just internally, that knowledge of here's how it's been done at my firm for 50 years, whatever, but what are other law firms doing, or what are other companies outside of legal doing? And it can really add tremendous value. I think one of the long, to go back from my long-winded response, what we found some pretty great, tremendous new hires outside of the legal field, and we found it's pretty simple to integrate them as long as it's structured as part of the new hire or kind of onboarding 30, 60, 90 day process to teach them the legal, because they might have the technical experience but not the law firm, how it works at your law firm experience. That has been a big win for us.
That's good. And, you know, actually, I've only personally been in legal for a few years. And I had to do a lot of convincing with the interview team. And I interviewed with, I think, 8 or 10 different people to make them understand that, you know, technology is technology, and you have to adapt and learn in any position that you get hired into, just as you said before, Luke. And so it's really just a matter of having the skill set to enable you to adapt and to learn. Those are the key things, not necessarily legal experience. Mm-hmm. Unless you're filling a short-term role, 3 to 6 month project work or something to that effect, it really may not be necessary to have that legal experience, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. I think you open the door to so much more, because if you bring someone with industry experience in another industry, you know, those types of hires are, I think, invaluable, because it can completely flip the switch of what I like to call how it's always been done. I loathe, and it makes me like sweat, and it's like, it's, you know, fingernails on a chalkboard when people say, oh, that's just how we've always done it. It's almost like a light bulb in my head, like, oh, we need to slap this person into shape. But really, I think that some of the processes and you know, kind of what we've been talking about all along, being more lean, is taking a hard look at, you know, kind of explain some of the things you do, map out processes. Can these be improved? If you bring someone with, you know, industry experience from another industry, you can sometimes flip that stuff on its head. And a lot of that turns into quote unquote innovative work. And who knows, you know, you almost see a domino or ripple effect. If you, like I said, if you bring them on and go through a proper new hire, find them a mentor, you know, it can be very valuable from hiring someone outside of legal.
It just adds another perspective of fact that you have to make sure that you're including when you're going through that interview process. You're not just focused on a technical aspect of things or just mm-hmm. their background, but you're also concerned about maybe the culture from the environment that they have come from. And Brandy, you know, mentioned it earlier, you're looking for more than just those technical skills, but you know, how do you keep up with the technology and the way things are going? You know, how do you feel about change? Trying to make sure that you have questions and things during the interview process to get more into that mindset of the individual as well, seeing if they're mm-hmm. willing to move forward with the way the future is going, or again, are they stuck with that siloed mindset and just, you know, put me in my corner, I don't want to talk to anybody, which, you know, a lot of technology people historically, that's what they've been used to doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so how do you all find those right individuals to fill those positions? Do you work a lot with recruiting agencies?
Well, I'm fortunate because I have the recruiting team about 8 feet outside of my office door. So I'm actually in the HR umbrella at my law firm as well. So it's an open stream of communication, literally, because we're at the same table many times, or, you know, just throwing ideas off of each other. And I think going back to what you were talking about, Randy, with regards to job descriptions and asking the right questions, I think is keeping your recruiting agencies or in-house recruiters up to date on what are relevant questions. I mean, it seems kind of dumb to say that out loud, but oftentimes the questions, the generic behavioral standard questions, are important, but to get to the meat of what someone knows or how someone does something, I think it's important to make sure that those are relevant and updated, because we've kind of been alluding to it all along that technology changes very rapidly. And if someone can, you know, fake an interview pretty well and read a few things and say a few high-level business type words, but I think the meat of it is, you know, how well do you work with others? How well do you work in a team? Tell me about some of your innovative projects. How do you get ideas? Where do you get information? I mean, I always go back to, I interviewed someone and asked them, you know, how do you stay up to date on the newest technologies? And they said, oh, I read blogs. And this is like last year. And I then asked, what blogs? And they were like, oh, you know, all the technology blogs. And so I knew right there, I was like, whoa, like this person's probably blowing smoke. So I think being able to drill down a little bit, but also giving that candidate a chance to prepare. So not just throwing on them, hey, tell me exactly what you use to stay up to date with technology. I think you get a good sense if you ask the right questions.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think one of the things I try to do with recruiting agencies specifically is I try to educate them on the team dynamic mm-hmm. within my organization. I let them know the types of questions that I ask and the level of technical input that's going to be required of the candidates, but I don't actually tell them the exact questions, because I've found that if I do that, sometimes they prep the candidates in advance, which is
mm-hmm.
that's a negative impact to the interview process. So, but I do have them come, the recruiters come and meet with my staff in a room. We try to have lunch together so they see the interpersonal relationships and they see the way that we communicate. You know, I'm sort of a drive-by machine gun fire boss where I just run by your office and tell you 100 things and expect that you retain them and can start working on them without me having to follow up very much. So that's kind of how I conduct the telephone screen for my interview process. And that gives people a good indication of whether or not they'll even want to work for me. And I let the recruiters know that. And I only work with recruiting agencies who are willing to go through the process as I've outlined it, because it's something that's worked. It's worked really well.
I think that's a great idea. I hadn't thought about doing that with external recruiters before. Like you said, bringing them in with the team, that's a good idea to try out. I typically have used internal staff, so I try to make sure I stay close in contact, much like you said, Luke. They're right outside the door with you. I'm in there talking with them. Mm-hmm. I know them personally. They know my team. So essentially the same thing, because they're always there, so they get to see the interactions. And going back to the interview process, I've had to basically do trial and error, it seems. We will get a batch of people in. They thought, from a recruiting standpoint, they fit what we were looking for. It's like you're getting the same types of people, and they're not fitting. So that's what are we getting wrong here? And taking the time to sit back, evaluate the type that we're in, and seeing if we need to adjust the description or understanding again, and then go through another batch and keep trying that process until we get in a more reliable group of people.
Mm-hmm. How do you communicate the job needs, the job requirements, the intangible things about a job to those that are seeking to help you fill your position?
What I usually do is, once they get past the first round, the recruiter, and we've got a solid pool of qualified candidates, at least per the first round of questions, is bring each of those people in for a meeting with my team, and make it fun and comfortable, and kind of knock down some of the corporate walls and have a dialogue. Because I can ask questions all day long, and you can give me a glamorous, wonderful response because you're prepared. But I think once you kind of get comfortable and you're able to hear from different voices and different, a diverse background of people, and like Radha said, the culture, to understand, I understand what the job is, but how does it really feel to work there? And hearing open, honest feedback, I think that's kind of to what you were saying, Brandy. Is this the place I want to work? And I think you're able to answer that if you give them visibility to your team. Now, if they were just meeting with me, that's usually like the final round or final cut. I like to take it outside of the walls of the law firm and like go have coffee and answer questions that they may have prepared and tell them stories that are kind of top of mind. And again, that just kind of helps you get to know the person better and understand what type of job they're looking for, what qualifications they have, and learn more, would they be a good fit for this team? Or do they not fit on my team? Would they be good in another area? I think cross-promoting other areas or other positions and keeping that network open. I don't have if this isn't right for you today, but if there's another position on another team, this is a very qualified candidate.
Yeah, I try to keep in mind some of those pain point or painful like situations that either I or members of my team have been involved with. I keep maybe a running list of those. Then the questions that I talk with them about in the interview process, sort of based on those scenarios. So if I know that that's something, whether it's, different personality types, different circumstances they may find themselves in, and I've got a long list of them, then I'll try to phrase a question where they're giving me examples of where they've had similar situations in the past and explaining to me, how did you deal with that? And, how did things end up in that situation? I found that has been helpful, because not only are they just, they're giving me the answer to the question, but I get to hear a little bit about their thought process, and their personalities come out then, especially if they're given a situation that they can really resonate with. Yeah, that's exactly a situation I dealt with. It seems like it gives me a little bit more insight into the way they think, if they've dealt with it in the past, as to how they would handle that same situation if they were to be with the organization that we're with. Mm-hmm.
How do you ask about situations with a candidate who has not been in a law firm before? How do you make that translation for some of the hiring managers that might be listening to this that need assistance in seeking someone outside of legal?
I think a lot of the things are interrelated. I think so much of it can be situational, team related. I will tell you that one of my favorite interview question is, tell me about a pet peeve, or what are your pet peeves? And sometimes they'll say, like, people clipping their fingernails at the desk, or they'll say, like, oh, Karen from accounting at my last job, goodness gracious. And they'll find themselves talking and talking and talking. And this happened to me, where this gentleman had said, this person in this role, we ride the elevator down. I'm, you know, walking him out. Like, all I want to do is say goodbye, basically. He did a fine job interviewing, but he kept talking about this person so much so that he said he shared things he shouldn't have. And immediately I was like, you know, this is an opportunity lost for you because you said too much. So I think asking, to kind of go back to what you asked, Brandy, I think asking questions from a decision-making perspective, team-building perspective, is this person collaborative? Tell me, you know, collaborative experiences, how do you generate new ideas? A lot of those are kind of interchangeable regardless of their, you know, whatever industry their background is.
All right, do you have any other thoughts, guys, we haven't covered or we wanted to go deeper into?
No, I think I'd like to look back on this, you know, our conversation in like 5 years and see how much stuff shifts. Because I think, I really honestly think there's going to be a dramatic shift in how technology impacts legal and IT specifically. I would want to look at like, what are our job descriptions today? Let's just pool every law firm that ELTA has. What are our standard job descriptions? And then look in 5 years, how many are new? How many have changed dramatically? I think that'd be awesome.
Right. And seeing how people align themselves to those job descriptions after 5 years.
Where are they now, kind of thing?
Right. And are they really any different, or did the title just morph?
Right.
It'll be scary if it was cyclical. It just went right back to where we are now with silos.
Right. And we're going to be doing the recording again.
Exactly. Everything we said 5 years ago, scrap that.
Right. Scrap that. We are just kidding. This was a test.
All right. Well, I think that was all the topics we had to cover today. Thank you for the opportunity to chat with you on this today. I don't get the opportunity to chat much on this, but it is really a passion for me. So when I was asked to participate in the podcast, I got so excited. I have tons and tons of things to talk about when it comes to recruiting and retaining IT staff, and also in the mentoring process that happens beyond that. So certainly a close to my heart topic.
Thanks for the opportunity for my end as well. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to ELTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.